Ag and Natural Resource Committee to order, and I thank everyone for being in attendance. I want to especially thank Representative Greg Smith, who has joined us at the podium. He is the chair of the Ways and Means Natural Resource, and today we're going to have an informational hearing on the Wolf Management Plan. And I will outline the procedures of what we're going to do, and then I'll ask Representative Smith, the other Representative Smith, to make a few comments if you'd like to. And thank you, committee. We're going to have Fish and Wildlife explain to us what the management plan is, and then we're going to have Department of Ag. We're going to have Defenders of Wildlife. We're going to have a couple of representatives and senators, I think, join us. I see Representative Shoffler's in the audience. And we're going to have the Oregon Cattlemen's Association make a few brief comments. So this is an informational meeting only, and this is so we can get the committee up to speed on where we're going to go on this wolf management plan, which I'm sure is going to be before this committee on many occasions. And Representative Smith, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Chair Smith. It's almost kind of an echo there. For the record, I'm Representative Greg Smith. I have the distinct pleasure of serving House District 57, which includes Union, Wallowa, Morrow, and the best parts of Umatilla County. I'm very pleased that Chair Smith has called this informational meeting today because we have an issue in this state, and that's the reintroduction of the gray wolf to the state of Oregon. And in my neck of the woods, folks are very concerned about this reintroduction. They're worried about their livelihoods. They're worried about the safety of their family, the safety of their property. And at the same time, they're concerned about the economic vitality or their lifeblood, if you will, and that is the cattle and the sheep that so many of them raise. And I know the cattlemen are here today, and they'd never admit they raise sheep, but in my neck of the woods, there are some sheep raised, and the fact is that they could become lost as a result of the reintroduction of the gray wolf. So I'm very pleased that this informational hearing has been set. I want everyone to know, I think people are here truly because they do want what's in the best interest of the state of Oregon. And each of us come from a different perspective on what that is. Where I live, we're going to have to live with these animals day in and day out. And that's why we're concerned about this issue. And that's why we're trying to hold this informational hearing so everyone on this committee will know both sides of the story and be able to make good, rational decisions as this issue proceeds forward. Thank you,
Chair Smith. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Those are very timely comments. I think the committee showed great interest in this issue when we had our brief informational session to start with. So I just want to start by bringing up Lindsay Ball, Will Ellicott, and Kurt Ely from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And maybe you can just explain, I'll let you do your presentation of what that plan is. And I'm sure we'll have plenty of questions. Good afternoon.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Wolves came on the radar screen for Oregon in a very big way back in 1999 when B-45 entered the state, migrating in from Idaho. And it became clear then that that was just the first immigrant from Idaho wolf populations. And so, looking at it in a proactive way, I had started the discussions with the commission that wolves were going to come to Oregon, and what would be in the best interest for Oregonians to become ready for their arrival. And as a result of some of those discussions, there started a process where the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission ultimately directing us as the department to come forward with a wolf conservation management plan. That will be presented to the commission tomorrow for consideration, with the commission scheduled to make final deliberation on that on Friday.
Can you give us an idea where that meeting is, just so people here have an idea? The exact location?
That meeting is going to be held up at Troutdale. It will start at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Thank you.
It is scheduled to run from 1 to 5, but it will continue until the job tomorrow is done with the public testimony. They will then pick up decision-making on the roll on Friday.
Thank you. And what time does that start on Friday?
I believe that is 1:30, isn't that Craig?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. I think the paper said 8.
Chair Smith, the meeting will start at 8.
It will.
There are other agenda items, but the final rulemaking decision on the rule plan will be at 1:30.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
With that, the department has been working the last several years on the growth plan itself, going through a long public process. I'm going to ask Craig E., who is seated to my right, who is the growth coordinator, to give you a brief overview of the public process that we engaged in. And then after that, he will speak to you about the result of Judge Jones's decision on raising the protection level of the gray wolf by the federal government from threatened back to endangered, and then explain some of the differences between what currently is in the law versus what the plan was built under. So with that, Craig, if you would please explain to the committee a little bit about the public process, and then we'll move into explanation of what's in the current plan and what the differences are.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lindsay. For the record, Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Craig Ely. I'm currently working on a special projects position assigned to the director's office, but I do live in LeGrand. As Lindsay explained, B-45, when she came into the state, she was a collared female wolf, 2 years old. She's one of the first pups that was born from the reintroduction that the federal government had done in Idaho. She was one of the first collared wolves. She was approximately 2 years old. She migrated down the spine of the Rockies and entered Oregon and stayed around John Day for a bit of time, and then moved over in the Norfolk to John Day, where she was subsequently recaptured and returned to Idaho. It's probably worthy to note there were two male wolves that did come to the state of Oregon, both of which were killed, both males, one of which was collared and the other one was not. One was hit on the highway just outside of Baker City, and then the other one was shot just outside of the Big Flats there. As Lindsay pointed out, we started a process when B-45 came into the state of educating our commission. We held 4 informational workshops with our commission, where we invited 29 experts from a very variety of backgrounds that had been dealing with wolves. We had a state senator come from Idaho, had guides and packers representatives, research biologists, Indian tribe representatives, other folks that had dealt with the wolves, to educate our commission and ask, and the commission was able to ask them questions about what are some of the issues that they're dealing with. From that, our commission made a decision for us to begin a planning process. One of the messages that we heard from many of the speakers that came to the commission was start a planning process, start early, and involve a variety of interests at the table. We opened up a nomination process. The commission asked us to move forward with a development of a plan that used an advisory committee approach. We asked for nominations. We received 82 nominations. We selected 14 people that participate on an advisory committee for us through a year-long process. We met with that advisory committee 11 times over a year, and we have used a professional facilitator to guide us through that process, because this is such a controversial issue. Wolves coming into the state, a species that's not been here for a number of years, and people come to the table with a lot of emotion. So we hired a professional facilitator. Quite frankly, I just didn't think that that we had the skill set within the agency for us to do something like that. So we used a professional facilitator to guide us through that process and keep us on track. As I said, we met 11 times. On October 15th of 2004, the committee recommended to the commission a draft plan. Now, I will tell you, out of that 14-member committee, there were 12 people that signed on to the plan. There were two that did not. The processes we laid out to the committee, we offered them that they could file a minority report if they didn't agree to parts or pieces of the document, and offered the commission a different alternative than what the rest of the committee presented. As indicated, there were two people that filed minority reports. The commission asked us then to go out with an informational meetings to the public. We held six of those around the state. This is now an agency draft document. And we held six of those around the state and told people what was contained in it. Then we got our advisory committee back for one more meeting on December 1st and 2nd, showed them at that point the public comments that we had received, and asked them to, if they had any last minute or last recommendations for the commission to consider. They made some of those, and this Friday there, the commission will be considering those again. That was the last meeting with our committee. We've held three public meetings where the public has been able to come and testify before the commission about their feelings on the plan. We've received well over 1,500 written comments now to this point. So people, as you can see, this has collected a tremendous amount of interest statewide. It's apparent to me when I look in some of our commission rooms and when we have meetings with the commission, that it's a different clientele that normally comes and talks to a Fish and Wildlife Agency. There seems to be a lot of young people real interested in this issue. So it's attracted attention from different folks than we normally deal with in a hunting and fishing organization. So we've held these meetings. We have one more opportunity, as Chair Smith pointed out and asked where that meeting was for the public to come and talk to the commission about it. At the end of the day, we'll close public testimony and then weigh in on decision-making on the following day, on Friday. So that's kind of a brief overview of the process we used. I've been to, myself, well over 50 to 60 different public meetings describing this to different people and tried to get the word out as much as we could. So with that, what I'd like to do is that we have a plan that was developed and put on the table. And from the very first meeting that we held with the advisory committee, there were two members of that committee that had been involved in filing a lawsuit, I believe it was referred to in the judgment. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't understand that sort of thing. But against the Fish and Wildlife Service for a decision that they had made back in April of 2003, where they downcrossed the wolf in the western distinct population area and in other areas throughout the U.S. from an endangered species down to a threatened species. And when they did that, they adopted what they call a set of 40 rules that accompanied that. That set of 40 rules then was the law of the land federally as we were building our document in Oregon. And let me go through that just real quickly here, the document that we've handed out, the briefing that we've handed out. At first there you'll see that we began in April of 2003 when the service recrossed the wolf from endangered to a threatened species. And following that, there were 19 conservation groups that asked for relief from that decision. And they based it on five issues that are laid out in the memo to you that claim that they failed to address those five issues. Monday of this week, Judge Robert Jones ruled in favor of the conservation groups on two issues.
Excuse me just a minute. Representative Bowen has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just back up just a little bit so the committee understands. In 2003, when Fish and Wildlife Service downlisted to threatened, they developed the 4D rules. Would you explain a little bit more for our benefit exactly what these rules provided, where they applied, specifically federal, non-federal lands?
Representative Smith, Representative Burley, the 4D rules allowed for landowners to take more aggressive action with wolves, and on both private land and on public land if they had a permit. And what it allowed them to do was to shoot wolves that were caught in the act. If you remember, under endangered status, wolves were fully protected. Wolves were fully protected, and only the federal authorities can then take wolves that are harming livestock and so on. The only exception to that would be if they were attacking you personally, then you could take steps to protect yourself. The 4D rules brought those standards down so that landowners could take steps to protect themselves on private property without a permit, and then on public lands with a permit.
Just follow up just to make sure we're clear on this. The 4D rules only afforded that protection under the Federal Endangered Species Act.
Yes. Representative Smith, Representative Burley, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
And, excuse me, I might point out, at that point, then when we reviewed Oregon's law, what we found was that, based on a review from our AG's office, that the Oregon Endangered Species Act allowed a higher protection standard than the 40 rules. We dropped below that. So we were trying to protect rules at a higher level than the 40 rules allowed. And what our planning effort tried to do was to bring those two in alignment with one another.
Representative Pass has a question.
Thank you. So the judge's decision on Monday made that plan moot, then, in effect.
Chair Smith, Representative Pass, that is correct. They raised the bar back up to an endangered and canceled, and the judge said vacated the 40 rules.
And if that decision then is reversed and the situation changes and it's downlisted again, would those rules still, would that plan still suffice, or is that what you're trying to do now, make up a new set?
Representative Smith, Representative Hess, I guess it was speculative on the same kind of rules would come back, but my sense is when the 40 rules, if the federal government were down this again, would come back in some form of that. That's correct.
Just follow up. Any sense of the time? I mean, are we talking 3 months, 3 years, or what do you think?
Chair Smith, Representative Hess, it's very difficult to predict. We've queried the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service about this recent decision. They have been unable to tell us what their process will be. They have a window of opportunity to appeal the decision. I believe that's coming up next Thursday, and then they will be able to determine. I know that they're working on another federal court case with Wyoming right now that's taking up all the federal attorney's time. That's the answer that we've received. So we don't know exactly how they're going to proceed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wouldn't it be the question then that the recommendation for a Friday's meeting would be to postpone any decision on management plan?
Chair Smith, that's a very good question, and I knew that was going to come up today. And my recommendation to Lindsay and the commission is that we continue forward. It's even, from my perspective, it's even more important that we move forward with this than ever. And the reason for that is we don't know when the federal decision will be made to either reclassify the animal. We know it will happen sometime soon. Sometime. I don't know about the soon part. So for us to be ready to engage management of wolves when that occurs, we need to have a document in place that guides us, that gives us those directions and guidance. As I said before, I think as Representative Burley would ask the question, when they downclassed from endangered and created the 4D rules, Oregon's ESA was more restrictive than the 4D rules. So we need to bring those two together in the future. And this by moving forward, it sets us up for that opportunity to occur.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I just want to step back so I understand the playing field here, because you lost me at the beginning. We have 14 advisory members on the committee. Is that correct?
Representative Smith, Representative Brokus, that's correct.
And then you indicated that there were two members of the minority The mayor may not file a minority report from your testimony. And then you brought up that there were two members of the committees or two groups participating in this that filed lawsuits. Is that part of the same 14?
Madam Chair? All right. Chair Smith, Representative Boquist, there were two members of our Wolf Advisory Committee that represented groups, Defenders of Wildlife and Hell's Canyon Preservation Council, that were part of the 19 that filed the federal lawsuit.
Paul, Madam Chair. So I understand this. We had 14 members that made a recommendation for that were involved in the recommendation plan. Two in the minority. Two involved in the lawsuit that just came down, which throws us into question. And then you provided the committee previously, committee members, a draft or a backgrounder on wolves in Oregon, which raises 18 points. And of those 18 points, 10 or 11 of those points are now in doubt. I fail to see the rationale that we don't go back to the 14 members of the committee and rehash this. There doesn't seem to be a majority at this point.
Is that a question?
Really a question. We have a whole lot in doubt here, and whether we wait 30 days or 60 days to clarify it seems a logical course of action versus acting in the next several days. So I don't understand your rationale, I guess, for recommending that we not just delay, a month or 2 months while we clarify it.
Well, Chair Smith, Representative Boquist, maybe I can explain the environment that we're working in a little more clearly. If we wait, our time in working bills in the legislature will diminish. That is one issue that is in front of us. The other issue that I feel pretty strongly about is that without a plan to guide not only the state of Oregon, but the federal government, without that, we will be left to the devices of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the feds with respect to how we manage wolves. And I think, in my estimation, it would be better for Oregon to have a plan to deal with this issue than wait for the federal government to dictate how that's going to be accomplished.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. And I've had the luxury of discussing it, and I don't necessarily agree or disagree that we need a plan, but there is no legislative drafts presently that I'm aware of, Madam Chair, to cover any of the original 3 points that we had, and I believe it's this committee it will come back to a month or 2 months from now. And I'm still in doubt of these, and maybe it'll be answered later, the 10 or 11 points that are in doubt of the 18 original points that came from this committee that I seriously need to address before bringing it back to this committee, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Director, I have a question. When is the next commission meeting? If we have one Friday, when is the next one?
The specific day,
is it in March?
No, we have one commission meeting per month.
Per month.
And they're almost all 4 weeks apart.
Okay, so you could postpone this until the March meeting. I'm sure we'll still be in session. That's a joke.
Chair Smith, as I mentioned, one of the things that we have been very cognizant of is utilizing this legislative session for potential legislation. To wait, as you know, the process, it takes time to work bills adequately in the system. And that was one of the issues that we were also looking at as we laid out the time schedule of events with the planning and preparation and delivery of the Wolf Conservation Management Plan.
Another question then might be, what drafts are in the pipeline that might come before this committee to go in that management plan?
Chair Smith, members of the committee, we have not put any bills in motion. Most of that is because this was a work in progress, working with the Wolf Advisory Committee to develop the proposed legislation. And then certainly what the commission may direct us to do. I anticipate there will be three legislative bills, but I cannot affirm that. And we felt it would not be appropriate for us to second-guess what legislation the commission would approve before they approved it.
Right.
I don't think that's appropriate to abuse the public process in that way.
Thank you. Representative Bailey, you have a question?
Two questions. The three legislative concepts that you outlined for us prior don't appear to be specific to the plan. In other words, the plan could still potentially be modified, but those three legislative concepts that you're talking about will still probably have to pursue. In other words, we're not legislating parts of the plan, right?
Chair Smith, Representative Bailey, that is correct. There would be specific adjustments to some statutes that would be necessary, and creation of compensation in a separate bill, but the plan itself would not be legislated.
Right. So it seems that you don't, it's not necessarily a prerequisite that you have a plan in place before you start the legislative drafting process.
Chair Smith, Representative Bailey, one of the things that became apparent to us is that to get buy-in from not only the public, but also the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, we would need to deliver some assurance that rules would be conserved and managed in the state, and that requires a plan.
Thank you. Representative Chris?
The second one is the whole issue.
Where's your second one?
I'm sorry?
I'm just kidding.
I'm still really hung up on the whole issue of tape. And, you know, this is a very complicating matter because we've got the federal ESA to deal with and the state ESA to deal with. And I'm just not clear how, even if we were to go ahead and adopt this Wolf Conservation Plan Friday, given the fact that it's now back up on endangered status, we don't have the opportunity for any incidental take permits. There's no HCPs, no 4D rules, none of those types of things. So even if this plan goes into effect March 1, and even if we pass these three laws by the end of March, before we all sign to die.
I appreciate that.
As long as these things remain as endangered status, what have we got ourselves?
Well, Chair Smith, Representative Bailey, as I mentioned earlier, I think it's more appropriate for the state of Oregon to have a wolf management plan than just simply wait for the federal government to tell us how wolves are going to be managed. What we do in our wolf management plan is we identify numbers of animals, we identify appropriate lethal take of wolves that are the bad actors, and none of that is identified for Oregon through U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I think it's appropriate for this state to make a statement as to how wolves should be managed. And in the absence of that, then we are going to wait for the federal government to do it for us.
And actually, I think that's a good idea. I mean, we did that with the Oregon plan for salmon. But that's not getting at my issue, and that's the one of allowing for the lethal take. Because if I'm understanding this correctly, even with this conservation plan in place, given the status federally, we cannot have that incidental take. Is that correct?
Chair Smith, Representative Bailey, yes, that is correct today. However, in some discussions with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they need to do legal review of their ESA in relationship to a management plan brought forth by the department before that can be ruled out completely. And I don't want to give anyone any false hope here, but the fact of the matter is they don't know if they can allow lethal take with a state plan in place, but they know they can't without the state plan. The state plan would allow some potential assurances that they can review legally with their counsel, and that is, again, I want to make, that is pending their legal decision, and I don't want to give anyone any false hope. But without that plan, I doubt that we'd be allowed any take of the listed species.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Sure, I have two, one for yourself, which is the second question, and one for Mr. Paul. So what you're saying, if I understand correctly, is that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife can't take a position, federal government cannot take a position until they decide what the legal position is. So therefore, they can't take a position for or against Oregon's plan until such time they determine their own position. Is that correct, what you're saying?
Jeff Smith, Representative Boquist, their issue is whether or not lethal take enters the legal realm for them with or without a plan. And that's what they're researching at this time.
Manager, I just educate. I'm the freshman here, so I bring a shoot at me, but that's okay. My question is we're past the bill deadline. And there were originally envisioned three bills, one to cover take, one to put it on the status in Oregon, and one to do compensation, which has, you know, revenue impact. At this point, with the bill cutoff date passed, am I not correct that the Speaker of the House will have to approve any bill that would be introduced, or a member of the House would have to use one of their personal ones to make this happen? So we're almost beyond the point of no return.
Yes, yeah. February 8th is our deadline for drop date, but we have two priority bills, each member, and the Speaker would have to authorize any other bill.
Can you follow up?
Yes.
Is there really any, has your office, the Governor's office, entertained this with the Speaker, knowing that we are, I mean, the Governor's office clearly knew when bill drop-off date was, that how we might go through this process?
Chair Smith, Representative Boquist. I have not allowed my staff to second-guess the commission or the process that we were engaged in. As I said earlier, in my estimation, that would abuse the public process and illustrate that we would be second-guessing the outcome. I'm very respectful of the commission and the process, so we did not intervene and ask that bills be introduced prematurely.
Thank you. Representative Smith has a question.
Thank you, Chair Smith. I may be from District 57 and not look very smart, but I am. I want to share with this committee that I've introduced three bills that are being drafted that would mirror these issues. And part of the reason I did that was to ensure that the language drafted is in alignment with what this committee could work with. And as you know, in this process, at any time, the sponsor of a piece of legislation, should they not get any co-sponsors on it, can pull their bill and kill it. And so I have three bills that are in the pipeline, each directed towards this issue.
Thank you. Does that answer your question, Mr. Boquist? Thank you. Go ahead.
At this point, it'd be good if Craig would walk through the list of what the judge's decision rendered does to the plan that we have text and you have as well.
Thank you, Lindsay. When Judge Jones made the decision on January 31st, 2005, he ruled on two issues that he sided with the conservation group. One was this notion of significant portion of moraines, that the wolf had not been had an opportunity to be able to expand in a significant portion of its range. Again, we're talking about the federal ESA. The second piece of that was that the service had improperly used the distinct population segment portion of the ESA to again make that downwind decision. Those two items have two effects in Oregon, as I've said before. It significantly raised the protection standard up for wolves to an endangered status, as you all know, and it also took the sole responsibility for wolves in Oregon was now with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, or federal government. So, and again, the only way that lethal take could occur would be with respect to federal employees or the threat of human safety. So, So what is the status? We've been had some discussions about the current status of Oregon's planning effort. Again, as I said earlier, I strongly recommended that we continue to move forward, and there's some reasons for that. Oregon's planning effort was centered around conservation of the species while trying to put tools together for livestock owners to protect their property. It also met the intent of Oregon's Endangered Species Act, which is in the statute. The Wolf Advisory Committee recognized that those were the driving forces of us putting together a plan, and they continue to do so today. As Lindsay mentioned, there are three things that we've asked the legislature to weigh in on: the legal status of the animal, listed as a special status mammal under the game mammal category. I'd like to briefly comment that would give us the broadest number of management tools to deal with the animal. The second one is amendments to our damage statutes, where again we address the lethal take motion of being able to give that tool to landowners to be able to protect their livestock resources. And then the third one is, what Rick Ball pointed out, would be a new statute to authorize compensation. It is something that when you talk to Oregonians throughout the state that almost everybody agrees on, that it's only fair that landowners be compensated in some way for losses that will occur from the presence of wolves. And I don't want anybody to leave this room today without acknowledging that we do realize that when wolves are in the state of Oregon, that there will be livestock losses. And we want everybody to not to leave the room not knowing that, because we recognize that as a potential. We tried to take steps to protect livestock losses in an adaptive management mode and deal with those animals if they are offending areas. As Lindsay pointed out, some of the key aspects of the plan were that when you compare them with the federal law of the land at this point, is that Oregon's plan included population goals, where we set some limits out there where we would, again, use the adaptive management approach, where we would allow more and more activity on those animals as the population grew. The federal government has none of that. There has no planning effort that went on for Oregon and for planning for wolves to come into the state of Oregon. They simply, when they went through the large EIS process to establish the experimental population, they went through a tremendous public process there to correct public input. They haven't done that for Oregon.
Yes, Representative Roseland.
And that's a question that I have. This was an EISA 10J experimental population. It was introduced in the Rockies, correct?
Chair Smith, Representative Bourbon, that's correct, yes, sir.
And in order to have any experimental population introduced to a state, you have to have a cooperative agreement. Is that correct?
Representative Roblin, that is correct. You would have to have if you wanted to expand the experimental boundaries of a population, you would have to conduct an extensive environmental impact statement process where you would be collecting input from all over the nation to federal process.
So if these are experimental wolves that are coming across the border, don't we have a right to ask the government to take them back? But unless they do this soil study in Oregon, they're experimental.
Yes. Chair Smith, Representative Roblin, two things enter into that issue. One is U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is not willing to take wolves back to Idaho that come into Oregon. And the boundary of the experimental boundary is the state line. And when they enter into the state of Oregon, they fall under the jurisdiction of endangered status by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Outside the experimental boundary, they are treated under the federal ESA as endangered.
So what you're saying is that the federal government can set up an experiment in one place, and if the experiment gets out of control down, comes someplace else, they become a different status where they go to.
Chair Smith, Representative Roblin, that is correct.
Just one minute.
The second question that you asked, the aspect of it from the state perspective, and this is what this this is where we ran contrary to the law when we returned B-45 to Idaho. State law mandates that the state of Oregon manages the wolf when it's in Oregon. And to take the wolf back and have a policy of taking wolves back to Idaho would be in violation of our state law.
Yes.
Under U.S. agriculture rules, it's okay to eradicate rats and vermin and predatory animals if they're causing damage to farm in other areas. Is that true?
Chair Smith, representing Roveland, if you're referring to predatory animals and such, there are provisions in the law that allow take of predators, that are animals that are classed as predators in statute.
And wolf is one of those, if I understand that correctly.
Chair Smith, representing Roveland, that is not correct. Wolves are not classified as a predator under statute.
In Oregon statute, federal statute. In agriculture, I believe they are, but I can check that.
Chair Smith, representing Roveland, I'm not that familiar with federal law to be able to tell you.
Okay.
Chair Smith and the members of the committee again explain some of the things in Oregon's plan that's comparing it to a federal law. Oregon's plan does describe a livestock compensation program, whereas the federal government in control has not gone through that planning process and does not do that, and even in the experimental area in Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. As Director Ball pointed out, Oregon's plan is an attempt to be proactive to try to take this issue head on, to try to meet the intent of what the Oregon ESA said and what the requirements were listed in there. And the last thing, wolves, in terms of a federal perspective, there's no monitoring program that they would have in place if wolves did begin to come into state. It would be complaint-driven. They would react to livestock depredation. Whereas in our plan, we have a very strong active part that would try to monitor these animals, let livestock producers know where they are so they can take steps to watch their livestock and protect themselves. And just in summary, I think the department has a very good track record about these kinds of issues and being proactive with respect to either getting out ahead of a federal decision. I think the issue of red band trout, where we put an intensive effort, where there was a petition for listing of red band trout, intensive effort to collect a lot of inventory information and determine that it wasn't necessary. The most recent decision of a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service not to list sage grouse is another one. The decision about Oregon, Northern California steelhead is another one where we were able to avoid that. And then the state, and here's an example where the state went ahead with the planning process and the Columbia white-tailed deer recovered the species to the point where they took it off, went through the process meeting the criteria, and took it off the state list while it's still listed as a federal. And for us to do that in Oregon, we need the state plan that sets and frames that up for us to be able to do that. We could do that independent of the federal decision. And then the last one is one about the coastal coral and efforts to work towards getting that off the list. Chair Smith, that concludes my remarks. I'll answer any other questions.
Thank you. I'll take a few more questions, and what I'm going to do is ask if you could stay around until we get the rest of the testimony, and then maybe answer some questions at the end if we need to. Representative Burley, Representative Rowe?
Just one. Okay. In the process that you went through in developing the plan, one of the issues when we develop a plan is to make sure of the economic impact of such a plan. And, you know, was there an economic impact done with the introduction of wolves with regard to all the other issues, hunting, depredation of other livestock, and other endangered species who may in fact be part of the predatory nature of these wolves?
Chair Smith, there was a chapter done on the economic impacts. We are staff economists measured the economic impact on the lifestyle community, tried to make some predictions. That's what it was, because we don't have any rules in the state, so we used data from other states to put that together on the number of cattle and sheep that may be affected, and put some economic values on those. That is in the document itself, the draft plan. In addition, the staff economists estimated the number of both deer and elk that would possibly be taken by wolves. I would note, if you have an opportunity to read that section of the plan, that in terms of the number of packs or number of wolves per pack, we used a very high number. When you consider Oregon's landscape, we think we're going to be more like Montana. The average pack size in Montana across the entire landscape is 7.2, and the number that we used in terms of average pack size was 14.2. So we tried to, I guess, make the number appear as the highest that could appear, if we had that many wolves in the state.
And the results indicated?
Sheriff Smith, Representative Robo, and I have some numbers here I can read into the record if you like. The four breeding pair, again, using 14.2 members per pack. And a breeding pair is defined as a male and a female for the planning purposes. A male, adult male wolf, adult female wolf that have produced at least two pups from that young of the year that lived through the end of December. That is the definition that we used. We could count them as a breeding pair if they met that minimum qualification. But we used the high number. Four breeding pairs are our threshold for state delisting, and that would represent about 57 wolves. The number of deer and elk that was estimated to be consumed by those was 1,325 deer and 342 elk. For a cost of, in terms of lost hunter benefits, and I have to admit some of my ignorance about economic impacts and so on, but you know, there's a lot of formula that you use to reach that. There's a value of a hunter day and a number of other things, and there's spin-off economics and things that are considered. But for the loss of those deer, it was $237,500 that would be lost to the local economy, and then for elk was $251,800. But I must put that in perspective. For the Blue Mountains, that represents less than 1% of the total revenues that come in from deer and elk from that particular activity. So, I mean, you have to read the whole, my point is, I guess you have to read the whole thing and take it in perspective and look at some of the assumptions that were made for developing those numbers.
Is that estimate on the cattle and wildlife that the state would be responsible to reimburse?
Chair Smith, Representative Roldan, yes, there is. That is in the document as well. I apologize. I didn't.
Okay.
I can get that for you.
Okay. Maybe you can provide that for me, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Smith. Just one question. Can you share with us the potential migration of the gray wolf? And my understanding is that these will be located in the Wallowas and in the Blues and even in the Steens. The question I have is, if they're able to coexist in peace, will they be able to migrate to the Ochocos or to the Deschutes National Forest and be allowed to stay there?
Chair Smith, Representative Smith, the plan does not restrict wolves with respect to where they could be. What we tried to do is to manage some of the conflict around those animals. You're right that if they can end up in the Steens and find a place to exist without creating conflict, then we wouldn't most likely go remove those from that area. In talking to the wolf biologists from other states, what we believe is going to happen in Oregon, because there are so many people living on the landscape, unlike some of the more remote states where they place wolves, is that wolves, it'll take a while for wolves to figure out where to hang out without causing problems and without man entering in management of them. And so we'll be very intensely watching where they do exist.
Just a quick follow-up. My boys and I, we enjoy going out and, you know, watching wildlife, hunting a little bit in the fall. Are the folks who, if the wolf is able to peacefully live in the Cascades, would there be any reason for the state to remove the wolf from the Cascades? If somehow they found their way there?
I'm sure Smith, representing Smith, yes, that they would, if they could find their way to the Cascades and they were hanging out there and not causing problems, Coast Range, there's not a limitation. It's really a matter of us trying to manage the conflict for those animals and then set some population parameters when we allow some additional management activity on those creatures.
Well, it sounds like all Oregonians potentially could enjoy the benefits of the gray wolf.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just have a question. I know you don't have the specific answer here, but I would like a follow-up on it. Based on the information you had given me, that, you know, a wolf would be 23 deer and 7.8 elk and the whole calculation, what I'm very interested in is the potential compensation package and how that might work, because I don't believe the state of Oregon has a single compensation package to date, and so this is going to be very difficult. So at a later point, I'd like to address the issue before we get to a legislative concept or a bill of what this compensation might look like. Because I calculate 644 deer and 224 elk, you know, maybe in Malawa County alone, and when you run out of that, you're going to get into the animals. And
thank you. Representative Burley?
Probably more of a comment. I just want to go back one more time here to address the sense of urgency to get the plan out. I don't disagree with the merits of having the plan. I think the sage grouse, again, is a good example. But a lot of the folks in this room are not concerned about sage grouse preying on their livestock. And this is the issue. And I really would encourage you to please ask your commission to just take a deep breath, put this on for another month till we get a better read on what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service plans to do. Because this take issue, to me, seems to be the real root issue here.
Thank you. Any comment on that?
Well, Chair Smith, Representative Burley, one of the things that I had mentioned when we stepped forth with this endeavor of being proactive in respect to management of wolves is how we deal with the livestock issue associated with wolves preying on livestock. And right. I insisted at that time that there has to be a lethal take provision in the plan for the take of wolves that are the bad actor, that are preying on people's livestock. And I appreciate this. Currently, under state law, if we don't have a plan, you're going to be in violation of the state ESA if someone takes a wolf that's killing your livestock. Now, that's just the bottom line of it. And so I wanted to make sure that we created the avenue for that livestock owner to be able to take the offending wolf instead of, you know, standing there watching it continue to kill his or her livestock or violate law by killing the wolf. And so I agree with you, Representative Burley, that is a very serious issue for us as we've gone through this process of coming forth with a plan.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to make sure that we're all clear on that, I mean, if we have the state plan and it allows for the incidental take under the Oregon ESA, and someone were to do that, they're still subject to being sued under the federal ESA with all conditions as they are right now. Is that correct?
Chair Smith, Representative Burley, Craig, do you have a response to that question?
Yes. If they remain endangered, what you say is correct. And when the wolf was listed as threatened, what was happening is, and I apologize to the committee for not explaining this very well, but Oregon law was more restrictive. and it wouldn't allow that to take place. What we are asking, one of the legislative amendments to our damage statutes, is to bring those two in line with one another.
Thank you, Representative Sumner. Got a quick question?
Thank you, Chair Smith. Mr. Ball, I thank you for many times in the past keeping me informed on what's going around. And more in a statement of concern, I'd like to say I'm very concerned about endangered species, but I'm more concerned about endangered beef ranchers and sheep ranchers. I'm concerned that they're going to be driven out of business absolute broke because of our inability to control predators. I'm concerned because in my district a few years back there was another Endangered Species Act that cost the jobs of thousands of loggers, that cost the dislocation of hundreds of families, that cost the tax structure irreparable damage in this state, and we now have forests that are nothing but tinderboxes ready to go up because we were concerned about a species of birds. Now in our concern for a species of predator, we're endangering cattle ranchers, we're endangering the economy of the entire eastern side of our state. I am very concerned about that, sir, and if it were me involved, I would make the federal marshal plop a writ of mandamus on my desk before I would be encouraging any move to protect an extinct predator. Just an opinion.
Thank you. I think we got it. I have just one quick question. I wanted to ask on the general fund. You said in the last hearing that we had that the general fund dollars, it was all federal dollars. The paper that you provided that the committee has now, it has general fund dollars on that. We have spent general fund dollars on a wolf management plan when wolves don't exist. Is that correct?
Chair Smith, Craig, are you referring to the money that's been spent on
the itemized
wolf plan?
Right.
Chair Smith, there were three sources of dollars. Some of them is a combination of a federal match. It was the SWIG grant, state wildlife grant dollars. Those were the federal dollars that came. It's a 75% match, 25 states.
Right.
And that 25% state was a representation of both general fund dollars and tax checkup dollars.
So there were general fund dollars involved?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Smith,
Craig, you're a constituent of mine. I just have to ask, what did you do to Lindsay to get this assignment?
Good question.
let me comment. and maybe this can kind of wrap it up from our part too. One of the things that we noticed when we started looking at managing wolves in Oregon is that it is an extremely emotional issue. It is more emotionally charged than any other fish or wildlife management plan that I've known the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to take on responsibility for. That's demonstrated by the number of people who have participated, the number of comments that we've received, written, email, telephone calls, personal appearances, the interest that you see today before this committee.
Thank you very much.
One of the things that continues to be a driving issue for us is how do we resolve conservation management and still allow the lethal take of the wolf when it is offending livestock owners or personal property, pets, etc. We're continuing to look for that opportunity to resolve that issue. And I think that Oregon can do a better job of managing a wolf than leaving it to the devices of the federal government. I've watched this before in several instances. Oregon can do a better job. Craig mentioned several species that we've worked on that have either removed them from the list or prevented listings to occur. And I think we in the state of Oregon are better at that than the federal government. We have more at stake, we have more ownership of it. That is one of the reasons that we've been an advocate to state engage in a very good plan for the gray wolf in this state.
Thank you.
That's where we are.
Well, stay tuned. I'm sure we'll have many more questions. Thank you. Senator Farrelly is strong. Would you like to come up and say a few words? Representative Schaffer is here, too. I don't know if we dare have a senator and a rep together, but...
Madam Chairman,
thank you.
For the record, State Senator Ted Farrelly, District 30, 34,000 miles of potential wolf habitat. Two things just as an observation, and I have some prepared testimony, and the chairman may know that I've never said a few words in my tenure in this building. I'm very nostalgic about this room. In 1999, I chaired the Salmon Committee that developed the Oregon Salmon Plan. And our committee met four times a week at 7 o'clock in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon until we were able to develop that salmon plan. And that was my definition of cruel and unusual punishment for legislators. I hope it doesn't become that way for this committee. And Madam Chairman, as I've listened to the committee, I'm absolutely confident that your members, Democrats and Republicans, have all the skill they need to pilot through the issues that you're going to deal with on this committee. And I appreciate very much what I've heard here today from the committee members. But let me share a perspective, and I want to tell you I'm speaking for myself as a resident of John Day, Oregon. First of all, I would tell you I think that the effort that was put forth to create the wolf plan was a good faith effort. I know that people participated in a long and arduous process, and they came at it with a good heart. And I think it's remarkable that the number of compromises that were reached have in fact been articulated in this plan. And I don't disagree at all with the assessment that the director left you with, and that is that Oregon can do a better job. The tragedy is that Oregon will not be allowed to do a better job. And I will give you the experiences that I've had personally with the Endangered Species Act. This plan has traction as long as you have a down list of wolves. There are virtually no deliverables as long as the wolf is listed at the highest level of protection under the Endangered Species Act. And this committee has already grasped that reality. It didn't take you 5 minutes. The fact is that the Jones decision changes the logic of the plan and the landscape, the political and the legal landscape on which this plan rolls out. And that's the tragedy of this. Oregon won't be allowed to manage this wolf. Oregon isn't trusted to manage this wolf. And if folks in the community haven't apprehended the fact, I'll point it out, and it's painfully obvious. The plaintiffs in this case are the defenders of wildlife. They are, I believe, members of the committee that helped draft the Oregon Wolf Plan. Is that not the case? Does no one else see that this is just the hammer and the anvil? The federal lawsuit is the hammer, and the Oregon plan for wolves is the anvil. And the people that are going to get smashed and hammered are the folks that live in the landscape where wolves will be introduced. That's the reality. Judge Jones' decision obviates the plan. The deliverables that will come with this plan, if it's adopted, are simply compensation for wolf damage. And maybe a few other management details that will nibble at the edges of wolf management. The key deliverable here had to be the thing of value offered for the thing of value given. And that is, if we were going to get wolves, we were also going to get management authority. So the bad actors, I don't know that there's a pack hunting predator that eats 30 or 40 deer a year can be considered a good actor, but the worst of them, we at least could relocate, or in the worst cases, get take permits for. Those are the elements that have to be present for a true compromise here. Ranchers and rural residents don't want wolves. Is anybody confused about that? But if they have to have wolves, they also have to have management authority. The two are coefficient. Judge Jones's decision destroys the basis for compromise. And it was intended by the lawsuit that compromise be destroyed. That's why people sat at the table and talked and compromised and then litigated where they knew they could drop the dime. Well, the only recourse we have eventually is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, let me tell you, we've been down that road before. Oregon had a plan. We had a great plan. Many of us slaved on that plan in 1999. It was to prevent the Coastal Cove from being listed. And you know what? It was successful. We were able to prevent National Marine Fisheries Service from listing the Coastal Cove. What happened? Some of the participants in the development of the plan sued on it and overturned it on technical grounds, and the Coastal Cove was listed. We still had the Oregon plan, so we were still better off, but only marginally better off. We had the ranging of the plan in the 2001 legislative session, and I alluded to the cruel and unusual punishment that was. And having that plan, at least we had the case to make or the argument to make that some of the things that we were proposing were less draconian and less impactful than some of the things that others were proposing. But at the end of the day, it was the federal agencies that designated the critical habitat. It was the federal agencies that expanded the first designation 100-fold and scooped up irrationally all kinds of property and all kinds of real estate in the state of Oregon. It was the feds that set the 64-degree temperature standard and caused buffer zones to be put on streams and displaced workers. And, you know, the federal law says that the Endangered Species Act cost of recovery will be 90% borne by the federal government. Show me the check. Oregonians took that hit. So I'm going to tell you, we're in exactly the same territory here. It's better to have a plan. But only in my estimation, if the wolf's downlisted to the place of the plan, actually can create management tools on the ground. And this can't do it now, under the certain circumstances that we're in. In my opinion, the solution to this problem under the current rulebook is that the state of Wyoming will have to revisit the issue of wolf management in their state and solve the problem, because the technicality is because Wyoming doesn't have a state plan that will guarantee the recovery of the wolf in that area, then the wolf cannot be downlisted in the West. Now we're into a state's rights issue with a state not under our control. It's Wyoming. If you've ever been to Wyoming and met some of the ranchers there, I think they're a bit as stubborn as some of the ranchers in Oregon are. I don't think legislators are any more soft-headed or soft-hearted, and I think they're going to have a big fight with the federal government over whether or not they can be mandated and pushed around and forced to create a wolf introduction management plan. Kind of sounds like deja vu all over again, doesn't it? It could take them 3 years. Or like us, we've been engaged with the Coastal Cove and we're on eight. And we're just now at the point where the numbers have come back at such significant numbers that we're able to have the discussion about whether or not the Coastal Cove even deserved protection under the Federal Endangered Species Act. It's taken 8 years to get to that place. How long will it take on the wolf? How long will it take Wyoming? How long will it take this or the next administration to revisit the issue about the downlisting for wolves? Meantime, you've got a plan on the shelf that may be adopted, which has very few deliverables. And what does that say about entering into a partnership? We are in Department of Fish and Wildlife on the basis that if we get wolves, we'll get management tools. And what happens when that phone call comes in? It will. When a rancher calls the director of the Department of Veteran Affairs, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and says, I need assistance. I want to use the management options that are in the Oregon plan. I have wolf depredations going on. My cattle are getting killed. My calves are disappearing. I need a take permit. And according to the Oregon plan, I can get one from you. And what do you suppose the answer will be to that call? The authority. You know, Oregon can do it better. Oregon won't be allowed to do it at all under this current scenario. That, in my opinion, breaks faith, destroys cooperation, and renders the landowner helpless. And they're going to be left with a terrible choice to file a paper claim where they need a necropsy and a couple of wildlife biologists on the scene within a few hours to determine whether or not the attack was by coyotes or by wolves, and whether or not it's compensable. Then you can argue about that. But who's responsible for that compensation? The people that forced the wolf into Oregon? From the experimental population? Or is it the Department of Fish and Wildlife or colleagues? Is it you? Did you do this? So that's a question you're going to have to answer. Interestingly, I'll make you a prediction here, just based on my experiences with the Endangered Species Act. The first wolf female that comes into Oregon and digs a hole and drops pups will cause the Defenders of Wildlife or some other organization misnamed as a conservation group. There's nothing about this group that merits the word conservation group. They will sue under the Federal Endangered Species Act, and the objective of that lawsuit would be habitat conservation and habitat designations, just as they've done time and time again with every species that's listed. Because the painful fact under the Endangered Species Act is that it's not about numbers, because we got numbers of coastal coho. And it's not about seasons or viability. It is about protection of habitat. That's the key issue at stake under the Federal Endangered Species Act. Somebody here mentioned the interesting alchemy that occurs when a wolf learns how to swim. They change from a member of a population designated as an experimental species, which falls under a different chapter of the Endangered Species Act, to a fully protected endangered species by just the ability to swim across the Snake River and put one paw on. They don't even have to hit dry land, you know, just to get halfway across the river. They're ours. They're listed under two sets of statutes, the Federal and the State Endangered Species Act, and they're entitled to full protection. That's irrational. I think the better alternative would be to recognize that wolf status did not change when it went across the river. That is an experimental wolf. That is not part of the recovering species. That is not part of the recovery plan. That is not part of a plan for reintroduction to Oregon. That is a wolf that belongs to an experimental population. And I would simply suggest to you that because of Judge Jones's decision, there's no imminent plan, there's no imminency to the idea that we're going to get a downward listing of the gray wolf. You know, Wyoming's not going to get an inspiration tomorrow to get a wolf plan. Maybe we should mail them this one. They're going to fight this issue, and it could be years before that fight's resolved. And it'll be years more before we get the political climate that will allow this or the successive administrations in Washington, D.C. to downlist the wolf. Meanwhile, the plan sits on the shelf. A broken promise. Smoke and mirrors. Enter to in good faith. Worked on by people who really care about getting the management authority that we need as long as we're going to have rules. And totally obviated by the federal judge's decision of last week. So I guess my point is, if I were going to invest 2 years of my life in something that I think is constructive, I would ask that the state appropriate the dollars necessary to create the Oregon Experimental Project. You know, if it's true that it's inevitable that we have wolves, because what we know about wolf biology is that they breed and they spread and they stay wherever they're tolerated. Any habitat where they're tolerated would support wolves. As long as there's cover and feed, they'll be there. And tolerance. I would just suggest to you that we're going to be here 2 years from now having the same conversation about wolves, just as we're here today talking about coastal coho and other issues that are driven by the Endangered Species Act. I would suggest to you that a better investment of our time and the Commission's time would be look around on the landscape and who has the most latitude for management of wolves. In what state will you find? It ain't Wyoming. It's Idaho. And the reason they did that, yes, they went through an environmental impact statement, and yes, they went out to the people of the United States and asked for permission to do this, or at least got their input. And yes, they had a very strong sponsor, not the state government, I might add. It's tribal interests. But they accomplish the goal of achieving a management plan that features incidental tag, tape, relocation, and other management tools. Now, they got rules in Idaho. Not everybody's happy with that. But they also have management tools that we won't have unless we do something similar. So I just would suggest, right up until the judge's decision is prepared to come to this committee or the commission and urge the adoption of the plan, even though two of my constituents, the two that worked on it the hardest, fell off the plan and filed a minority report. But today I'll tell you, the cattlemen don't like this thing. The Farm Bureau folks have talked to me about it. I'm not talking about the whole membership. I'm talking about many of my constituents. People, just an average person on the street, don't like this thing. Whatever promise that was in the plan is obviated by the judge's decision. So I would just tell you, I think that there's a better solution. I still agree that having a plan is probably a good idea just from a negotiating standpoint. The Endangered Species Act, as Representative Burley knows, does contain provisions that the federal agencies in developing their own plan have to consult with and coordinate. Those are specific language that's contained in the Endangered Species Act. And that doesn't mean just dropping your postcard or giving a call. That means they have to sit down with you and actually coordinate their planning with your planning. So having a plan gives you at least a place to sit at the table and talk. But this plan at this time, with the uplisting of that roof, won't deliver anything to those people that have been asked to compromise the security of their farms and ranches and businesses. And the only thing they've asked for in return for that compromise is the ability to manage when there's no other choices for them. And now we're taking that away from them. Just a few other little considerations, and then I will defer to my colleague, Representative Shaffer. You want to open the issue of compensation for wildlife damage? I'd like to talk to you about alfalfa. And wheat. And hay. And trees. Seedlings. Let's talk compensation if that's the way you want to go. Perfect. There's a group of folks who believe utterly and completely that the gray wolf is extinct in Oregon and can't legally be listed on the Endangered Species Act. If this committee wants a challenge, I think you ought to drill into that issue. Find out whether or not there's an erroneous listing there. I don't know how politically you're going to negotiate navigate the waters of resolution of that issue, but I think if you look into it, you find you can't list this extirpated species under the Endangered Species Act in Oregon. Otherwise, we'd have bison and a few other things that used to be here. Madam Chairman, I very much appreciate the invitation to come testify to this committee. I know this committee has dealt with issues that are as difficult as this.
And you painted such a good picture.
Yeah. I'm hoping that the commission has the wisdom to forbear. I know that the commissioners are deeply invested in this issue, and that worries me because I think there's an emotional connection to seeing the fruition of those labors and the coming together of an agreement they've taken a year and a half or two to broker.
Right.
The point is there's no object left.
Right.
The objective of the compromise has been snatched away by the federal courts, as so often happens in natural resource issues. And so to continue to do this puts the department at a terrible risk. How much cooperation do you think landowners are going to give the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife from this day forward if that plan is adopted, knowing there are no deliverables for landowners?
Right.
It's going to be a tough sell to get people from ODF&W on the farms and ranches to conduct wildlife surveys and fish counts.
Good point. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Shoffler?
Thank you. I'll try and be brief. Mike Shoffler, State Representative, District 48, Happy Valley, Southeast Portland. And you may ask, well, what are you doing here? You're from the city. But my family still are dairy farmers in Minnesota, and I grew up in Iowa, and I have a very soft spot in my heart for folks that raise the food and meat and poultry and fish that we all eat and demand. Last summer I had the opportunity to travel around with a good chair around the state of Oregon, and that committee and some others, and meet a lot of good folks out there in Eastern Oregon that are going to be directly impacted by what we're doing here in our nice suits in these buildings in town. And I don't think I can put it any better than what's been said here, but I just wanted to come and lend my support to the folks that are going to be impacted in this and do want the flexibility that is needed in a good plan, a good management plan that allows for cattle ranchers, farmers, sheep ranchers to take care of any threat to their cattle, their livestock, their pets, and their family, and do it in an immediate and, if necessary, lethal manner without going to town, calling somebody up, and creating a committee, having a meeting. You know what? And if we don't put something in place, giving those folks the flexibility to take care of their own property, we're going to make criminals out of them. And that's wrong. And that isn't what I want to do. And I just wanted to come in and add my support to those folks because I just really feel like we've already imposed enough on them, to be quite frank with you. Not just in the cattle ranching, but our good representative from Malawa put it very well. To create some rigid system that with no flexibility that's going to put a hardship on these folks is wrong. And I'm not against the department, I'm not against the commission, I'm not even against wolves. But we have to have some kind of reasonable, sensible flexibility so those folks who can protect what's theirs. And I just cannot believe that if I went to southeast Portland, in the middle of town, middle urban area, right my district, and walked up on the corner with a perfect stranger and asked them, do you want wolves in Oregon? Well, some of them probably say, yeah, I think that'd be okay. And then if I said to them, would you like the government to force a rancher to stand out on his or her land and watch that animal kill their livestock and not be able to do anything about it? Well, they would say, well, that's crazy government at it again. And they'd be right. So I don't want that kind of rigidity. I do want some flexibility. And the deliverable is allowing ranchers to dispatch a wolf with lethal means if necessary, and then be the judge and the jury right then and there on their land. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for the opportunity to testify.
Okay. Thank you. It's 5 to 5, and I'm going to try to get us out of here, but we have the Defenders of Wildlife, and we have the Department of Ag left to go. Do you have a time constraint, or? No. Okay. Department of Ag, do you want to come up first? And thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the record. My name is Chuck Craig. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and with me is Roger Huffman, the Administrator of our Animal Health and Identification Division. Madam Chair, members, we very much appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. And in the interest of time, I'm going to abbreviate what I had planned to say and have the focus be on some high-level points that Roger would make on the plan. We've been following the development with wolves for 6 years since B-45 straight into Oregon. We joined with the Department of Fish and Wildlife at that time in sending a letter to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service demanding that they come and get it. That's history now, but Roger's been our point person on this all along, and I'm going to ask Roger just to share some high-level observations from his involvement with the plan.
Great, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Roger Huffman, Administrator of the Animal Health and Identification Division, the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and thank you for this opportunity. I guess we'll start off that, as Craig mentioned, there clearly is no doubt that the livestock industry is going to be impacted by the wolves that come to Oregon. There will be conflict, significant economic losses, and considerable stress to those that may not even have an actual death, but they're, you know, just to keep the animals out or keep their animals alive. In recognition of some of those issues, the plan that is currently out there for comment was intended to deal with some of those. I have given you a copy of the comments that I've submitted to the Department of Fish and Wildlife on the plan itself and the proposed rules, so that you can kind of see some of the things that we think would certainly enhance the plan and make it more workable. Obviously, we have no decision as to whether there is or isn't a plan. Certainly, one of the issues for us is compensation. Maybe even more important now, if the federal government is not going to allow for tools for control of these animals, I guess the alternative would be to compensate for the losses. Probably even more important about the compensation issue is that it's always after the fact, and that there are no tools, obviously, to restrict or to stop the animals now, especially since this recent decision. I'm going to kind of shorten up my talk, but
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Pass.
Thank you. Even with the federal plan in place, is there something preventing Oregon from setting up a compensation plan?
Madam Chair and Representative House, I guess my comments were going to include that. Of the legislative things that were proposed, the compensation issue, it appears that it's still, in our opinion, may be a viable thing since we're going to have to be living with the rules.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. And of course, because their status has changed, we certainly want to, recognize the fact that federally, because of reintroduction area, there was money for the control, the management, response of wolf issues. Oregon was not included in that, and we're all aware that the federal budget isn't overflowing with money for this, and we're concerned that Oregon may not have get any of that piece. It certainly hasn't over the years, and it isn't in the plan, so where would the money come for? Obviously, that would deal with our concerns. But in summary, if some of the things that I've given you copies of were to be adopted, or all of them, the plan would certainly be more workable. But I guess the stress and part of Fish and Wildlife has been very receptive as we've discussed this. As you well know, the plan's only as good as the will to implement it and the money to carry it forward. So this is probably the most important thing as we talk about the citizens. Once it's created, if the management does come to Oregon, we have to be there to carry it out. These landowners, producers are all dependent on that, and I think it's absolutely the most important thing for any of us in government to make sure that we have the trust of those that we're doing what we say we're doing and what we plan to do. So that's a very key piece, I think. So with that, I think I'll just wrap
Thank
up.
You. I'm sure we're going to have you back many times on the same issue. Are there any questions, Representative Ogle?
Just one. We've had wolves in Oregon for a while with regard to permits that you can give to people owning their own and taking care of them. Isn't that true?
That's correct.
And part of that agreement is that they are responsible for them? And if they were to escape, they're responsible for recovering their animal and so on?
Yes, that's true. Actually, they're required to be in captivity continuously. The only time they're really allowed to be moved, I think, is for medical care purposes. But
And there's no... Do we have the ability to ask the federal government to get permits if they're going to have their experimental animals?
Madam Chair, Rep. Ogle, we asked our Assistant Attorney General that question, and her opinion was that the context of Oregon statutes is it's in the context of people holding animals in captivity, and that it really doesn't apply to wolves roaming at large that are under a federally preemptive law. So I don't think that's a viable way to go.
Thank you very much. Ms. Wise from Defenders of Wildlife. from Bill Hoyt next. We'll have you next. Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening, Madam Chair.
Good evening, you said.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Justin Martin. I'm here on behalf of Defenders of Wildlife. Thank you very much for this opportunity to share some information with the committee. While I am new to Defenders, I'm very encouraged about the commitment that this organization has made to work in consensus and to be at the table in designing sound public policy for Oregon. I'm also pleased to have with us today our expert, Amarouk, who is also a member of the Wolf Advisory Committee. So again, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you so much for this opportunity to address you. I realize I have 4 minutes. There have been a number of things that have come up, in addition, that I'd like to address if I may have that opportunity.
Sure, ma'am.
Thank you. My name is Amarouk Weiss. I'm the Director of Western Species Conservation for Defenders of Wildlife. You heard a little bit of mention about my organization. Just briefly, Defenders is a national wildlife conservation organization. Our headquarters is in Washington, D.C., but we have field staff in 10 states, Canada, Mexico. We have 2 offices here in Oregon, and I'm based in Ashland. We're best known for our work on conserving large carnivores such as wolves and grizzly, although we also work on sea otters, dolphins, and many other endangered species. My particular duties are to focus on wolf conservation in the Pacific Western states, and that's why I'm here before you today. I also supervise our staff in Idaho, Montana, and Alaska who work on wolves and grizzly. So I can tell you over the past 5 years I've worked for Defenders and the 3 years previous that in wolf conservation, I've certainly gotten an earful of the different viewpoints on having wolves coming back to a country in large parts of which wolves have been eradicated. So I do understand this is an extremely emotional issue, and it is wherever it's taking place. On a personal level, I would like to note that I'm also speaking as a rural resident of Oregon and a livestock owner. I do not raise livestock for my living, but I do have horses. My husband and I have always had horses. We've always lived in rural areas. We've had other animals, and we have the same concerns for the safety of our animals from animals such as cougars, rattlesnakes, and coyotes where we've lived. I'm also an Iowan, like Representative Schaffler, so I grew up in an agricultural area, and I also appreciate those concerns. I was on the Wolf Advisory Committee that helped ODF&W develop this plan. And as you know, Defenders of Wildlife was the lead plaintiff on the federal court case that came out this last week. My remarks are addressed to 3 points. One, the Oregon Wolf Plan itself. Secondly, some comments on the federal court ruling. And third, how these two juxtapose in our perspective of what's next. I submitted some written statements. Justin just brought them up to you. They're fairly thorough. What I'm going to give you is kind of the short version. You probably also have some materials that I'd sent along regarding our own compensation and proactive funds that we have run for wolves throughout the country where wolves exist and that we extended to Oregon in 1999 when V45 came across. So just so you know, our compensation fund and our proactive fund are currently in place in Oregon, regardless of the legislative need for the wolf plan. We haven't had any claims submitted to us yet in Oregon, but it is in place here. First of all, on the wolf plan, it's our perspective that this plan is a very reasoned and very balanced plan. I think it's very noteworthy that there's consensus for this plan among the 3 most divergent interests on the committee. And that is the hunter representative, the conservation representatives, and also the rural Eastern Oregon representative, who also happens to be, along with his brother, the largest sheep producer in the state of Oregon. And if anyone is going to be losing livestock to wolves, it will more likely be the sheep producers than the cattle producers, at least in terms of numbers. So his support is very important to note. I would also like to note the federal court ruling itself that came out. A lot of people are very concerned about this because we've been well on the way to developing our own reasoned and balanced plan to manage wolves at the state level. Our view is that this court ruling is a speed bump. It is not a brick wall for the Oregon Wolf Plan. The federal lawsuit that was decided on January 31st actually has its originations going back a number of years. Our involvement in this process way predated the Oregon Wolf Planning process. Back in 2000, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service released a proposal to reduce protections for wolves across large portions of the country without making an appropriate assessment of whether or not there was still viable wolf habitat there and whether or not they had a conservation requirement there. They had a public comment process. We submitted comments at that time telling them that their assessment violated the law, it violated their own internal policies, and it violated Congress's intent for conservation of species. We weren't alone. 20,000 other people submitted several comments. 2000 and 2001, two separate federal courts told the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in two entirely different cases involving two entirely different species that the way they were doing this assessment was wrong, and they were ruled against in those court cases. So the federal government was clearly on notice, not just from us, but from the courts, that they were on a dead-end road with the way they were proposing to reduce protections for wolves. When they finally did come out with their proposal, ignoring public comment in the courts, we gave them an advance notice of intent to sue, giving them an opportunity to rescind their rule and do it correctly. They ignored it. We were left with no recourse but to file the lawsuit. Let me make it very clear that this lawsuit was filed completely separately of and had nothing to do with the Oregon planning process. Defenders of Wildlife is on record as supporting wolf conservation by the states that have good conservation and management plans. At the very first wolf meeting that we held for an advisory committee, myself and Brett Brownscombe from Hell's Canyon Preservation Council, which is another organization that is a plaintiff on this case, explained to all the wolf advisory committee members, we felt very strongly that state management with a balanced, reasonable, science-based, legally implementable wolf conservation and management plan is exactly what we wanted to see happen. Let me note that the reason that the court overturned the federal government's wolf proposal in large part is due to the fact that they reduced protections for wolves across vast portions of this country without doing an assessment to determine if threats to wolves had been removed in those areas where they were reducing protections. One of the things that the service has to look at is a five-factor analysis of whether or not threats have been removed. One of the key factors is whether or not are there adequate state regulatory mechanisms or adequate regulatory mechanisms of any kind in place if you remove federal protection. They did not do that. What kind of adequate regulatory mechanism could we be looking for? A state plan. A state conservation plan that addresses the social concerns of the people in that state and at the same time addresses the conservation needs of the wolf. The Oregon Wolf Plan is exactly what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service now needs to do the job correctly. If we don't adopt this plan, we are in no better shape than any other state that has not devoted an ounce of effort, time, money, or public comment. We are no better off than Nevada or Washington or California, who hasn't done the work that we've done. Adopting a plan is the right thing to do. I'd like to briefly just make two points.
I think you're going to have to make it very brief because we're running out of time. So.
I'd like to assure this committee that in the entire process of being involved in the Wolf Advisory Committee, there is absolutely no intention, none, of dishonesty, of attempts to negotiate compromises, thinking that the compromises would be swatted away by the federal court decision. I would like to assure the committee of that. We won't be suing for habitat protection for wolves in Oregon. As Senator Farioli himself noted, wolves are habitat generalists. Any biologist knows that. You don't need to protect habitat for wolves. They can live anywhere that people can tolerate them.
Thank you. We have questions. Representative Smith.
Oh, thank you, Chair Smith. That's great to know that we have another rural person in front of us. Tell me, what part of rural Oregon are you from?
I live between Medford and Jacksonville.
How many head of cattle do you have?
I have no head of cattle.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said you had lots of horses.
Okay. Chairman Smith, Representative Smith, I do have horses.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Part of the plan is to fund a compensation plan, part of the plan. Most likely that's going to be general fund dollars that could go towards our schools, dollars that could go for police, dollars that could be used to help our senior citizens who are without prescription medicine. Can you tell me how you feel about taking $200,000 of general fund away from those activities?
Chair Smith, Representative Smith, you pose a question that probably is at the foremost of most Oregonians' minds because of our economic situation. How do I feel about that? I feel that protecting native species, our web of life, is a future legacy for all of our children and our grandchildren and for those people living today. And I know that for even people who are in the poorest economic of circumstances, being able to go outside and view wildlife brings them tremendous joy. I think that there's a balance. I don't know what that balance is, but I do believe that applying funds that relate to conservation of native species is part of the same balance of providing health care and education for our citizens.
Follow up. Thank you. I'm chair of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Economic Development and Transportation, and I'm also a member of the full Ways and Means Committee. And so I have the responsibility and the charge of balancing our state's budget. And the fact is, it's a zero-sum game. If you take dollars from one area and put it somewhere else, those are just a few less dollars here. The question I have is, would you say that putting those $200,000 into a compensation plan is more important than placing those dollars into our schools, into our state police, or into our seniors? Because that's where general fund money is spent.
Chair Smith, the equation is different from my perspective, and I think that my perspective is shared by a number of Oregonians, and that is that the agricultural interests in this state are as important as education, are as important as police services, are as important as other services that are also lacking money. My organization has had a compensation and proactive fund in place for many years. Our compensation fund was enacted before wolves were reintroduced to address wolves that were naturally migrating across the border into northwestern Montana and livestock conflicts. We value the agricultural producers in this country. We support them. I personally, if I'm out at dinner and I'm ordering lamb, if it's New Zealand lamb, I'm not ordering it. I order American. The same goes for supporting our agricultural interests here. I realize that there are some in the agricultural community who are not satisfied with our compensation fund. They think we could do it differently. We're open to suggestions. This summer we established a livestock advisory council of two cattle ranchers and two sheep producers who are advising us on changes we could make to our compensation and proactive funds. But I think the money is well spent towards being able to compensate those livestock producers in Oregon that could suffer livestock losses.
Just one last question.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Smith. First, let me begin by saying thank you for the amount of time you put in on this plan. I imagine that was difficult work and it was very time consuming. In your comments to us, you stated that it was not your intention to stop this plan or to sabotage this plan in any way. In your role with the Defenders of Wildlife, you must have known that some type of judicial action was going to occur. Can you tell this committee what steps you took to stop that judicial action and to try and have this plan take the place of the decision of the court?
Chair Smith, as I indicated previously, our efforts to stop the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service from doing their illegal reduction of protections for wolves has been ongoing for years. We've been involved in wolf conservation recovery efforts and negotiations with the federal government on their actions since the mid-60s, since the 70s. In 1999, we published a document called Places for Wolves that talked about where places had been mapped out by conservation biologists. So even at that time, we understood where in this country there was still viable habitat for wolves that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was not considering. We engaged in negotiations and lengthy discussions with them over a period of years. We filed extensive comments back in 2000 and continued in negotiations over the years. When they did go ahead and go forward, as I said before, we did file a 60-day notice of intent to sue, giving them again another opportunity to pay attention to the two federal court rulings before that showed them they were on the wrong path. I think that we took every step that we appropriately could take.
Thank you. Representative Burley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the interest of time, I'd like to ask that you provide this committee in writing all of the details of the Defenders of Wildlife Compensation Plan in Oregon. how much money is currently available, how people would apply for compensation, who would make those decisions, what would the rate of compensation be, those types of things.
Chair Smith, Representative Burley, you'll find in the packet of materials that have been given to you are verbatim our compensation written guidelines on how one applies for compensation and what are the prerequisites to meeting those requirements and what might forestall someone from not meeting those requirements, and it does specifically mention Oregon in there. There's also a fact sheet that indicates our compensation payments from 1987 until at this point in this year, 2005, where we have compensated, whether it's been for cattle, sheep, or other types of livestock, or livestock herding or guarding dogs, and the figures. Is that helpful?
I'll look at that, thank you. I didn't realize that was on the packet.
Certainly.
Second Follow question, please.
Yes.
And I, just for clarification, I want to make sure that I understood you to say that if we had the conservation plan in place here in Oregon, that it would provide the federal government more flexibility. And what I'm curious is, do you then mean that they could perhaps downlist the wolf in Oregon if we had the CWP in place? Downlist in Oregon so that we can have the ability for the lethal take.
Chair Smith, Representative Burley, what I'm saying is that the only way it's really possible for them to do that is if we have the plan in place. It is the quote-unquote adequate regulatory mechanism that is the type of thing they need to be looking at when they can say, yes, in Oregon they are addressing these threats to wolves. Now we have the ability to downlist. I don't know what that process specifically will be. I do not know whether or not they intend to appeal the decision. I do not know whether or not they intend to approach us for negotiations on what they could do, although really all we're asking them to do is follow the law. But I do know this, that if we have this plan in place, we are optimally in a first place in line, so to speak, for when they do the proper evaluation, for them to look at what we've done and say, yes, now we can turn this over to state management.
Thank you.
Just a quick follow-up, please. So if all other things notwithstanding, there were several issues, key issues in the lawsuit, two or three of which the judge based his decision on, but no change in any of that. If we had the plan and they downlisted the next week, would the Defenders of Wildlife support that decision?
Chair Smith, Representative Burley, that's obviously a key question. The folks within our organization are still consulting on this with our attorneys, but I can tell you this, that our organization went into the Oregon wolf planning process with the full support for all of those management techniques if the wolf is at a federally endangered and 4D status. If the federal government looks at the plan and agrees with us that this is an adequate regulatory mechanism, then I don't see that we would be opposing it.
Is that a yes?
As I said, we're still consulting internally at headquarters and with the attorneys that represented us on this case.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Because of time constraints, I'm going to move on. Thank you very much.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
You're welcome. Sharon Beck and Bill Hoyt. I'm going to try to get us out of here at 5:30, so thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for allowing us this opportunity. I am Sharon Beck. I co-chair the Wolf Task Force, the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and I was one of the dissenting members on the WAC committee, the Wolf Advisory Committee, and did write a minority report and minority opinion, which is in their documents.
Okay.
The Oregon Cattlemen's Association expresses and has a stance of zero tolerance for wolves. But wanting to a representative on the committee to try to influence a positive outcome for any plan that might be adopted, given the commission directed one to be written, even though there was no legal requirement to do so. Early on in the planning process, on behalf of the livestock industries that I represented, I submitted to the plan authors, the department staff, and the advisory committee a list of Category A issues that I felt, that we all felt, were a minimum to get into that plan. Some of those have required legislative action that you heard about today, and our issue was full and fair compensation for depredation of livestock as defined in a model that I wrote that is in that minority report. Another was that provides tools and the latitude to aggressively mitigate livestock wolf conflict. Some of the other Category A issues that we wanted to be made a part of the plan that didn't require legislative change requires the plan to identify no wolf zones and highly desirable wolf zones. There are places they can be and places they should not be. It required that if a minimum number are used to fulfill some requirements for delisting, a conserved number, that's what they called them, an accompanying maximum number would be adopted beyond which wolves would not be allowed to grow. And that it will be implemented only with a dedicated budget and necessary funding to pay for all of the provisions of the conservation plan. None of the livestock producers' minimum requirements were adequately provided for in the plan, and that obviously is why I wrote a minority report and a minority opinion, making very clear which those areas of disagreements that we had. It became a people control plan, a wolf plan, a wolf introduction plan, albeit passive, just as surely as those plans in the states that had wolves forced into their presence by the active federal introduction. Those issues are moot now that Judge Jones' final order has vacated the downlisting of the wolf in the 4D rules. According to U.S. Fish and Wildlife, the result of that order is that any of the experimental wolves from Oregon, from Idaho dispersing into Oregon, will receive full protection of the federal ESA. Clearly, that ruling makes the Oregon Wolf Conservation Plan irrelevant. Considering that ruling, the plan's flaws pointed out in the hearings process, the minority report, minority legal opinion, we believe the Commission has one reasonable choice, and that is to withdraw the draft plan and rules from consideration indefinitely. We believe that if a serious reevaluation is done of Oregon's laws that pertain to wolves, wildlife damage, Endangered Species Act, exotic animals, and private property rights, and a literal application of those laws, there will need to be no plan, no need for changes in the law that the plan suggests, and most especially, no need for the huge expense required to implement the plan. It's like the spaghetti sauce. It's all in there. And here's why. Any wolf dispersing from Idaho's experimental population to Oregon is not an Oregon endangered species because it is not native to Oregon and it is introduced. Nor is it a non-game wildlife. It is a federal wolf under the jurisdiction of U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Wolves have been declared extinct from Oregon and most of the western United States for nearly 60 years. The Oregon legislature, clearly believing that there were no native wolves remaining in this state for nearly 30 years ago, reclassified any wolf, as an exotic animal and wrote prohibitions against keeping them. State law allows a city or a county to prohibit by ordinance the keeping of wildlife and exotic animals, and at least one county has passed such an ordinance to prevent wolves from coming into their county. There is a clear acknowledgement that there is no such thing as a wolf native to Oregon left in existence. Therefore, any wolf that is likely to be here would be here in direct custody of U.S. Fish and Wildlife, because it will be from an introduced population outside this state, and as such, will be their responsibility. They will be required to follow Oregon's laws on the keeping of exotics. They will have to control it to avoid physical and financial risk to the public as a result of an escape or of the animal or otherwise.
Let me interrupt you. You're saying because a county passed an ordinance forbidding those animals, the wolves cannot come into Winona, Multnomah County.
Can't
come in the gorge, is what you're saying?
No, one county has passed an ordinance.
Is it Multnomah County?
No.
Oh.
Well, they may have too, but Grant County passed such an ordinance.
Oh, they did. Okay, thank you.
We believe the prudent course of action for the commission at this juncture would be to withdraw the draft plan from consideration for not meeting the needs of Argonians, either socially, economically, or legally. They should begin a periodic review of all the species on the Oregon Endangered Species List as required by law at least every 5 years, and which they have never done in the 18 years since the list was adopted. We are confident that such a thorough and honest review under established rules and laws will demonstrate that the likely dispersers from the introduced species in Idaho will not meet the necessary standards to remain on the Oregon list.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Horn, did you have
a... Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my job today is to read a letter and comment briefly on a couple of its passages. In the interest of time, I'm not going to read the entire letter.
Thank you.
They told me I only had 2 minutes. This letter is written to the as my way of comment on the wolf management plan by Dr. Howard Meyer, professor of Oregon State University. And we feel that he has a common sense grasp of the issues as they relate to the proposed wolf management plan. I'm submitting my comments as a hunter, a hiker, and supporter of Oregon livestock industry. From these standpoints, I would vote against rules becoming established in Oregon if that were an option, recognizing that the fact that rules will come and given the current tangle of legal issues surrounding wolves, I offer my comments in hopes of making management of Oregon wolves as palatable as possible. I read part of his first point. We acknowledge that who will bear the costs and who will reap the benefits of wolves in Oregon. The primary benefactors of wolves, wolf introduction, are the, quote, feel-good crowd who risk nothing but share no costs of wolves. And the costs will be borne by ranchers and hunters and through the livestock and game killed by wolves. And I would add, as well as the Oregon taxpayer. To his point, the second point is that we would offer pro-wolf entities to reimburse for livestock losses as a joke. The criteria for documenting wolf kills is unrealistic to anyone who has worked with livestock over the large areas that they graze, particularly on grazing allotments. Reimbursement is limited to market value animals verified by as being killed by wolves, but that is only a small portion of the economic loss sustained. A range cow cannot be replaced by another animal, even another range cow, that does not have long-term experience of knowing the water, feed, trails, etc., particular to range being grazed. If two herds of cattle are swapped between grazing allotments, performance of both would suffer. The ranchers procure a new grazing area. They commonly observe that it takes 2 or 3 years to introduce cattle to become proficient in utilizing the range and performing as expected. The reimbursement policy also does nothing to reimburse the livestock killed by wolves, which either aren't found or are not found in significant time to verify a wolf kill. Cost of livestock production losses due to animal stress goes beyond animals killed. In a recently published report that indicated that willows in Yellowstone Park were recovering since the wolf introduction caused the elk herd to stop grazing in riparian areas, upon which they were vulnerable to wolf attack. Range cattle are every bit as aware of their surroundings as elk, and similar grazing disruption will cause a stress and result in underutilization of the forage and consequent reductions in animal performance. I skip to the data to number five. The data from Montana and Idaho and Wyoming are consistent with reporting that wolves multiplied faster than they predicted. And as just an aside to this, the Idaho experimental population started at 33 animals and is currently, as of 2004, over 800. I would also then skip to his suggestions, and that is that they empower livestock owners to protect their animals from attack, and that somehow
we require the benefactors of wolf introduction to share the costs of wolves in Oregon. Bottom line, he submits at the end that wolves come in and given some limited protection in their numbers to build to tolerable levels without causing undue damage to livestock or big game populations. It is generally accepted that the wolves be currently wandering around eastern Oregon at the moment are causing no problems, but likewise not being persecuted. And I would add to the committee that if adopted, the Oregon legislature will be asked to fund, if not in part, totally, this proposed plan. And my question to the committee would be, can Oregon afford the cost of implementation of a wolf management plan given its current budget constraints? And I thank the committee.
Thank you very much. I think you classify as speed reading.
I was only given 2 minutes.
I know you were, and I appreciate that so much. Committee, do you have any questions of Mr. Horton, respect? Thank you so much, and thank you for being so patient.
Thank you.
As you can see, it's a very complex issue, and we do have other things going on. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the director while they're still here? We said we would bring them up at the end. If we had any questions, do you, Representative Smith? We spent 2 hours on a very complex issue, and I think we're all inundated with information. Representative Bauer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate everybody being here today. I appreciate the education I'm getting on it. I hope that I'm a person that is not overreactive and listens to all sides. I'm still trying to process all the information. But since I haven't said anything, I wonder if they know I was actually here listening to what you had to say. And I'm still struggling a little bit with the why we wouldn't want a wolf plan or why we wouldn't want this wolf plan question that I think I'm hearing from this group. So I'm listening. I'm open to input from anybody, and I appreciate you all coming.
I think Representative Bauer put it very well. That's exactly why we had this hearing today. So I appreciate you all coming. I'm sure we'll revisit this issue many times. Yes.
See, this is what she does. She's like a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Oh, good analogy. I don't think that's a cliche we'll use in this committee. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.